Everyone, greetings. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I would like to invite you to visit naturalnurse.com because we have a really big lineup of all kinds of classes coming right up shortly. So if you go to Natural Nurse, you'll see there's various tags. The one that says calendar, that's the one where we have all our group classes. Of course, we have many, many one-on-one events, but we don't list them on our calendar. That's where somebody wants to know a protocol of natural herbs and medicines for themselves or their family. That would be like a consultation session. And then we have many people who would like to be natural in their profession, such as Dr. Courtney Sims, which we'll be bringing on soon as a wonderful guest today. Like, how would a healthcare provider move into the field of natural medicine? So we have a full course on that. It's called Career Paths in Natural Health. Many different nurses and licensed healthcare professionals take that class. And truthfully, anybody can transit with whatever skill set they have into natural. For instance, what if you're a graphic design artist and you maybe want to work for an herb company? They need you. And then your whole day, the discussion around your life and that which your work eventually provides to the marketplace is all natural, even though you're not a healthcare provider. So there are many, many paths through career paths in natural health. If you look at calendar, you will see we have some in-person edible and medicinal herb walks coming up, several. Those are in the Oyster Bay, Long Island area. And we have one at Restoration Farm in Old Bethpage coming up. But then we have many online webinars, which anyone can come on board from wherever they are, such as Biofilm, Herbal Support in a Sticky Situation, where we're going to talk about how many illnesses are linked to biofilm, what it is, and how to get it under control. And then we have a wonderful several-day event at the Great Lakes Herb Fair. And that's a virtual event with many wonderful teachers. I am teaching a 4-hour in-depth workshop on all kinds of things linked to women's health and wellness. So we also have, like I said, herb walks in the field. So check out naturalnurse.com. You can take a course called Opiates, the Problem, the Solution. And many of these classes, most of the ones that I mentioned, also have credits, CE credits for health professionals. And again, if you're not a health professional, you can just go ahead and take the class. You just don't need the credits, but you're still gaining that information for yourself. And if you wanted to work towards your RH, which is a registered herbalist degree, they can be used towards the training that you need. I do a lot of mentoring with individuals who would like to become an RH, a registered herbalist. So I'd love to bring on my guest. Her name is Dr. Courtney Sims, and she is an MD. She was born and raised in Georgia and went to Xavier University and Tulane Medical School, and then also the University of Texas. Dr. Courtney is board certified by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology and is a fellow of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as a certified practicing menopause specialist with the North American Menopause Society. Dr. Courtney studied with Dr. Tirana Lodog in clinical herbalism. And of course, Dr. Courtney is a member and on the board of the American Herbalist Guild. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Courtney.
Thank you for having me, Ellen. It's a pleasure to be on again.
Now, this show is a new show, so they don't know you were on again because we did our different show together. So don't worry about if you think you're saying something again, because this is a different audience. And this is also a very large international audience. So we have a lot to share with them. But let's start on your path, Dr. Courtney. When you were young and growing up, what made you move towards becoming a physician?
Well, I always say it's a very interesting story, how I ended up in medicine and how I ended up as a OBGYN. So when I was in about seventh or eighth grade, I had this teacher by the name of Miss Crawford. I loved her. She's a great teacher. So she had us do an assignment. I think she was my English teacher. And we had to write about what we wanted to do, you know, once we grew up, what we wanted our career to be. But the way that she framed the assignment, she kind of took you through these progressive steps where you really needed to critically analyze what you wanted to do and why you wanted to do it. So I first started off wanting to be a lawyer, but there were too many problems with that in terms of, you know, defending somebody who might be guilty or prosecuting someone who might be innocent. That was too complicated. So the next thing after that that I liked was science. And I knew I wanted to help people. I knew I wanted to be involved with taking care of people. So that put me on the path to medicine. And I stayed on that trajectory, you know, all the way through college, med school, got into residency, med school third year. And I was thinking originally that I might go into like pediatrics or internal medicine. But my first day of my OBGYN rotation, I did a little bit of clinic, we did some deliveries, we did some surgery, and I was just hooked. I was hooked by the whole aspect of all of the different things that you could do within the field. And I was really hooked, I guess, in terms of just taking care. I really enjoyed women's health care, you know, taking women through the different phases, you know, from adolescence to young womanhood, motherhood, post, you know, menopause, that transition, postmenopause. I mean, it really is a continuum that women go through, like a flower, you know, that blooms. So I really enjoy that aspect. So that's what took me to OBGYN.
So you were involved with science even in high school. You knew you were going to go into a professional career, so you got yourself prepared by taking all the correct coursework.
Yes, I was very active in high school. I was in band, played the clarinet, still do. Actually, I just restarted playing.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know that.
You know, let me just throw this out, because I, and many of the things we do is have so many interesting intricacies, but I'm a professional belly dancer.
Oh, and, really? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. Okay, we learn more about each other. And so I have a special relationship with some clarinet players who play that kind of music.
Oh, nice.
Which is a very unique, you know, it's not
style,
like regular American clarinet playing, but
exactly,
they do use that and other similar instruments that become, you know, really have a whine to them. And mm-hmm. I had one person that we did a lot of solo work with that. So it was really a special instrument to me.
That is so interesting. You know, you have to have your creative side. I think it's super important, right, to nurture, you know, not just your intellectual side, but also that part of you that just is purely creative, you know, in the arts, you know, dance, music, these things, you know, they take time to practice, but they really, I feel like, give you back so much just in terms of joy. You know, so I really enjoyed coming back to playing. I was amazed how quickly I picked it back up. So I did a lot of band in high school. And then I was serious about my academics. I always say, though, I don't really feel like I was, you know, kind of really academically challenged until I got to med school. College, you know, flowed pretty easily for me, except for organic chemistry and physics. Those classes were not my friends. But I got into med school, and then that's when, you know, the real, you know, rubber meets the road. And I always refer to myself as I was basically just like a professional student, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day in the books, hitting the books. Tulane, where I went, had a very flexible structure. So it accommodated a lot of different learning styles. So for me, I was a very independent learner, and that worked for me. I just went straight through. So, but I know a lot of people, you know, there were people in my class who had had a complete career before. The oldest person in my class, Max, was 50, I think, when we started, or he was going to be 50 when we finished, or around that age. And he had had a whole career in like photography before he even came to medicine. And there were several other people in our class that had, you know, careers and had done other things before they came to medicine. And I always found those people to be even more interesting and you know, honestly, probably a little bit of a better, you know, relator to people because they had done other things first, you know, and interacted, you know, in the world as opposed to just going straight through. But I think taking care of people to a certain degree is a relative calling. And so if you have, but it can show up in a lot of different ways. You know, it can show up in healthcare. It can show up, you know, by nursing. It can show up by teaching. It can show up by, you know, in ministry, herbalism. I mean, it can just, you know, show up in so many ways.
So then continuing on your path, you became an MD. When did you decide to specialize in OBGYN?
I decided to specialize in OBGYN in, well, it was, think of it as like two phases. So first, it was like midway through my third year in medical school. Typically, the third year is your rotations in your base clinical set. So things like pediatrics, internal medicine, psychiatry, OBGYN, surgery. These are the fields that we kind of, family medicine, we at least at my medical school, we rotated through. So you would do like a 6 to 8 week exposure in that particular field to kind of give you a feel for what the specialty was like. So I knew once I had done my OBGYN rotation that that's what I was going to do. And even though I did several electives after that in my fourth year of med school, I still stuck, you know, that's to make sure that you still, you know, want to do your primary thing and you don't want to, you know, subspecialize. So I stuck with OBGYN all through fourth year. So that's what I applied for in residency. And then once I finished my residency and got out into practice, then I kind of stretched my wings a little bit more just because I felt like I was missing something in my practice. So I had really good training, and what I was trained on, I knew how to do really, really well. But there was just some part of me that felt that there were other things that could be offered that maybe weren't necessarily a medication, right? So I started getting more interested in nutrition. I started getting more interested in hormonal management. So at first, you know, I had to make the first initial decision to go into OBGYN, right? So that was in med school. But then about 5 years, 4 to 5 years post residency, once I was out in practice, then I made another shift to just focus on GYN only, just because I was really interested in those phases of a woman's life. I felt like when I was delivering and I was doing OB, because of the way my style of practice, it was very intense. I didn't take call with anybody because I was very personal with my patients, but it takes a toll. So I wanted to try to diversify a little bit and focus on the other stages of a woman's life.
Well, GYN, of course, yeah, GYN is, let's say, more broad, but you were doing baby deliveries then.
Yes, I did. I delivered for the first 5 years of my practice. So that was the majority of, you know, I had a mixed OBGYN practice for the first 5 years. But then I decided to concentrate more on, you know, the other phases and hormonal management. So once I got into hormonal management through North American Menopause Society and became a certified practitioner through them, then I discovered, you know, they, in their training, they talk a little bit more about you know, things that I hadn't learned in residency. Like I hadn't really learned as much about, you know, nutritional approaches for hormonal management and some herbal approaches to hormonal management that were covered in small pieces in some of that training for that certification. So that piqued my interest because that uncovered the fact that, oh, okay, there are other things and there are other approaches to hormonal management outside of what I've previously primarily been exposed to, which is surgery and prescription medication, which there's always a place for that. But I was just interested to learn what other things could be done because I had a lot of, you know, patients as well who, you know, wanted things to help for certain conditions, but, you know, were uncomfortable with the concept of, you know, taking a birth control to control, you know, a hormonal problem or, you know, being aggressive with the surgery. So I was really kind of searching for other options to offer my patients.
So you are really deeply steeped in evidence-based medicine, mostly from a conventional perspective. Now, yes. Going back in time, would you say there was any kind of relationship to older or folkloric kind of remedies in your family, if you think back to your aunts or grandmother?
I mean, if I think back, you know, it's funny that you say that, actually, because I've been recently doing some work on my family tree, and I found that one of my great-grandmothers was a midwife. So
that's what I mean.
I was like, where did this, you know, because I was little, my mom, my dad, they're both teachers, you know, so I was like, where exactly did this interest come from? So yes, that's definitely there. I wouldn't say, you know, my mom had a lot of allergies. I had a lot of allergies. So even as a child, I interfaced a lot, you know, with the medical system. And I think that might have shaped me to a certain degree as well. Just having to go to the doctor and having to take medications and, you know, having, you know, experiencing something personally that causes you to have to interact a lot with the medical system, I think changes your perspective when you become a provider too. Just because as a patient, you know, sometimes you don't always want to take a medication.
Well, and the reason is because it will often give you symptomatic relief, but it does not even, as you now know, deal with the causative factors of the condition in the first place. And then the therapies often work for a while and don't continue to work. And they have their own adverse effects that usually accumulate over time and sometimes are worse than the original condition.
I agree. And this is part of the reason why. Remember how I was telling you in practice, I would have, you know, think of it as if, you know, you're trained a certain way, you know, and as standard of care. And this is what you're supposed to do for XYZ condition. And so you have, you know, someone in front of you who you are committed to helping, and you're offering them what you've been trained on. This is what you know, right, to offer for the condition. And the person in front of you is challenging that and wanting to know if there is something else, you know, that, you know, I guess maybe because both my parents are teachers and I've always read, I mean, I'm just an investigator. So, you know, when I had people challenging me to know, okay, well, Dr., you know, Courtney, is there anything else? Like, what else can I do? That caused me to look to see, you know, okay, well, what else can we do for heavy periods that's not birth control? What else can I recommend for menopause or hot flashes or night sweats or, you know, vaginal dryness, low libido, weight gain, thyroid issue? Like, what else can I offer people other than, you know, just medication, lab studies, imaging? Not that there's not a place for that, but the people in front of me, the women in front of me, demanded more.
That's
so
beautiful.
As a provider, I had to learn more.
We're going to take just a short little break here, Dr. Courtney, so we can listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we're going to venture into your adventure and your ongoing learning and teaching with a really functional medicine perspective. And you even completed training with the Institute of Functional Medicine, which is really, I really think, the premier educational resource that shows somebody's really serious and has a great in-depth knowledge, not only just sort of saying herbs, but deep botanical knowledge, like mechanism of action of why certain natural remedies would be extremely therapeutic for the conditions that you just listed. And then, of course, your personal experience with the fact that way, they work really better than just a drug. And it doesn't mean we throw drugs and surgery out. We use the whole compendium of what works in its appropriate time. So we will be right back with more right here with our guest, Dr. Courtney Sims, MD. You could find her at drcourtney.com. That's drcourtney.com. And we'll have that live link on our archives. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com. And we'll be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse And Dr. Z, thank you so much for joining me today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. Visit naturalnurse.com. Look around. We have thousands of pieces of free information there, videos, an archive of radio shows. Yes, we have been doing this so long, myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone. They were called radio shows at the time, and in fact, actually are done in radio studios. And now, of course, they're also called podcasts. Nonetheless, they're searchable, thousands and thousands of topics. Everybody that you've ever heard of in natural medicine is there, including our beautiful Dr. Tiarona Lowdog. She and I have been colleagues for many, many years. Long before she was a physician, she was involved in the American Herbalist Guild. And that is actually someone who our own guest today, Dr. Courtney Sims, studied with. And Dr. Courtney Sims, MD, our guest today, can be found at drcourtney.com. And also, she has a health education site called Holistic School of Harmony and Health. What is that school about, Dr. Courtney?
That school is all about what I love. So integrative medicine, herbal approaches. Not everyone that comes to see me or asks for help can't necessarily wants to do it in the form of an office visit. And to a certain degree, I feel like I want to pass on some of the knowledge that I've accumulated over all of these, you know, trainings and how much I've learned. So I've kind of packaged them together in self-driven courses, some of which are interactive with different live events, just to teach about integrative approaches to medicine, herbal approaches to different conditions like vaginitis and PCOS and fibroids. Meditation offerings on there because I am a registered yoga teacher and I just started my certified meditation teacher training. So I wanted to, you know, offer that as well because that's a big aspect of what I do.
And you are a learning junkie, Dr. Courtney.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to have a piece of paper big enough to list all your letters after your name, which is admirable. That is admirable. I know.
This is what they need. You know, I learn, you know, I try to limit myself. I really do. Like, I try to like critically evaluate when I take something on. Like, is this really like, what is this giving? Is this really going to help me in my practice? Is this going to help me with my patients? Is this additional thing that I want to learn formally going to make a difference for someone? That's kind of how I judge whether or not I should do it or not. That's what brought me to functional medicine because, you know, after I had finished, you know, gone through Ayurvedic training and then, you know, that opened and broadened my eyes even more towards herbal medicine. And then I sought out more herbal training, found Dr. Lowdog's program with her Foundations in Herbal Medicine program, which has just been excellent. You know, her layout and the way that she goes through everything has been great. So I've really enjoyed that training as well. And she, you know, I'd already knew about functional medicine at the time, but she had referenced some things in that training as well that brought me around more so to that approach. And I'm on the pathway now. That's a process. You know, you have to go through a certain amount of modules and trainings to become a certified practitioner, but I'm on that pathway too. So hopefully I'll be finishing that within the next couple of years.
Right. It's a big project.
Yes. But again, I've only tried to take on just like that, you know, when I said, you know, my patients demanded more. So I've only tried to take on what my patients need, you know, and patients, you know, nowadays, because of modern society and toxicity and modern lifestyle and lack of access, you know, people need root cause medicine. People need integrative medicine. People need herbalism. You know, people need, this is what the need is. This is what's in my office. This is what's calling me every day. So again, a lot of this, part of it is driven by intellectual curiosity, but the other part of it is driven by pure patient need.
And also outcome.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Because you can feel so satisfied when you see people get well.
Oh, it's more than satisfying, because I think the difference is, you know, when you're managing a condition with a medication, you're doing just that. You're managing it. So you kind of have this patient on this little treadmill, you know, going around and around, and they're perfectly managed and they're perfectly content. But if the minute they try to step off that therapeutic, then all, you know, everything breaks loose.
Okay. And so wait, right, let's back. Do this. Pick any patient. It can even be sort of not one specific patient, but maybe one therapeutic intervention that you've seen. Let's say you did conventional work with this patient with this condition. They got somewhat better, but it became repetitive and you moved more into integrative. What your protocol would be and what kind of outcomes you saw?
Let's say something common.
Yeah.
Like heavy periods. So the most common traditional conventional approach towards management of heavy periods at a gynecologist's office is going to be some form of birth control to limit the amount of the flow, cut the days of the cycle, and bring some semblance of control to the bleeding. So I've had patients on birth control, and you know, I would have a patient, let's say this one particular patient, who had tried to get off of birth control several times just because she didn't like the way that birth control interfered with her mood. You know, it made her kind of more cranky around, you know, her cycle, and she just, you know, she didn't want to have to take it. But every time she tried to get off of the birth control, you know, she would just self-discontinue it. Her periods within 2 to 3 cycles would come back. They would be heavier. They would be crampy, you know, and it was to the point where she just couldn't really deal with it that well, although she wanted to get off of the medication. So she had gone to a couple of other providers before, and they had suggested, and she had gone through, you know, switching different forms of birth control, but every type of form of birth control that she tried gave her some type of symptom, either acne or mood or low sex drive. You know, everything that she tried, it really wasn't working that well. She wasn't interested in doing a non-hormonal IUD. That wasn't, you know, because she didn't really want to have a device in her body. She just wanted control of her cycles. You know, she didn't have bleeding in between her cycles. She just had a heavy, crampy flow. So she comes in, you know, presents this history, you know, so I look at her and, you know, she wants to know primarily what else she can do besides, you know, try another form of birth control, which she's completely over with by now. And she really wants to move towards something more holistic and natural. So first I talk to her about her life. So, you know, what she eats, how she sleeps, you know, what she does, what her day-to-day schedule is. You know, come to find out, she's a very highly stressed individual. She has a high stress job. She has a young child at home. She has a husband who works, but he's offshore. So he doesn't always come in all the time. So there's some issues around, you know, just support for her. So she wants to know, you know, so I tell her she eats pretty good most of the time. That's how she describes her diet. She sleeps pretty well. She tries to go to bed by about 10:30 every night. And she says she generally sleeps through the night, but sometimes, you know, she'll have periods of time where she wakes up in the middle of the night and she can't really go back to sleep. She does describe herself as a worrier, and she hasn't really found anything for that, but she's not interested in prescription medications for that either. So I talked to her about, you know, my approach is more of a global approach. So I always explain to patients when they have what appears to be a hormonal based issue that your hormones don't operate in a vacuum. They operate in your entire body. So if you are looking at your hormones and you're dealing with a hormone imbalance issue, you need to look at your whole life. So you need to, the stress, you know, that she was carrying and the lack of, you know, time for self-care kind of influenced things. So, you know, I gave her a treatment plan for that. And then I gave her some options for, you know, some supplements, some vitamin E and some magnesium and some calcium to help with some of her painful cycles that she was having.
And so let me ask you this. Was there a particular kind of magnesium and calcium that you suggested?
I like citrate forms. I also like glycinate forms. And I'll usually do like a 2-to-1 ratio for that.
See, and so that is exquisite knowledge. That's why people would go to a functional physician rather than just grab a calcium off the shelf or magnesium, which might be a carbonate, which is not going to be absorbed well. And the pills might be full of other kinds of excipients in the other ingredients, which usually wouldn't happen when there was one specifically that you prescribed. The other thing I just want to throw out there in terms of the mood irregularities when she was taking the birth control pills is that birth control pills very actively deplete B vitamins, mm-hmm. which are often linked. In fact, every single pharmaceutical depletes specific nutrients. And I actually teach an 100-hour course in that at medical and pharmaceutical universities. And a lot of doctors, probably including you, were never trained in that, which
We were not trained. I didn't come. It wasn't until I started exploring functional medicine and you're just not taught it. So it didn't occur to me. You're taught about side effects. You're taught about contraindications. It didn't occur, you know, so you would follow what's on the labeling, you know, right. What you should do. Like, think about metformin, right? Like how badly metformin depletes vitamin B, but it was on the market for like so long.
Oh yeah, but don't you think that moving forward in conventional medicine, that it should be that every single physician, when they write a script, should be co-writing a script for a high-quality supplement along with a food list that repletes those nutrients that the drugs are known to deplete, which are linked to the adverse effects.
I agree, but it goes deeper than that. And what I was, you know, it goes to the systems that we use. So, you know, I use, you know, an EMR that has quarterly updates. And so any type of, you know, updates to the prior authorization and contraindications to pharmaceuticals, anything like that, that automatically happens. If you think about the EHRs that most providers use, the databases that they integrate with are not natural databases. There's no comparable option unless you built it in. Like in my system, I built in templates for my lifestyle prescriptions and my herbal recommendations and my functional testing, but I built that in because that's the perspective that I have. There's no real good traditional EMR that integrates both of these. So there are functional EMRs that a lot of functional health providers use exclusively, and there are, you know, simple interfaces, but it goes even there, right? On a systemic level, if you're writing a prescription, right, there's no prompt to think about. There's no prompt to say, hey, you're writing this prescription and, you know, it will come up with a contraindication. You shouldn't use it in this condition, in this condition. There also needs to be, hey, this also depletes this vitamin and this vitamin and this vitamin. So, you know, automatically,
yes.
If you had that level of integration, then it would be a lot easier. Even
well,
for
we have to make that.
Trained.
Okay. I'm saying you're younger than me. We have to make that happen because you know what? What if someone has a chronic B vitamin deficiency that eventually leads to a serious condition, not only depression, which can be serious and could lead to suicide, but even things like Parkinson's and neurological problems. That person may never have gotten it had they been repleted in their B vitamins, which is such an easy and inexpensive step.
Yes. Yeah, a lot. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be helped and assisted just by, you know, I think it's perspective, like you said. You know, you have to have, you know, the perspective to to think about when you write for something, you have to like take an extra step to think about what is this taking from the patient? You know, I'm giving this to the patient to treat something, but what is this taking for the patient? And then I think you also have to go a step further to think about, you know, the long-term goals and consequences, right? Like, I think a lot of times, sometimes, you know, we start things, you know, as therapeutics, but we don't necessarily think about the long term, right? Like, when we're putting this patient on this merry-go-round, especially for a chronic medication, right? Like something that we're not using acutely. Do I have a plan for when they're going to come off? Well, when is that plan going to be? Or am I just going to, you know, constantly see them for follow-up and follow-up and follow-up and follow-up forever until they die? So, you know, I think most people would prefer to get off of a medication merry-go-round if they could, right?
Right. And also feel better. Don't you find it more satisfying since you've been practicing integrative medicine? You've put together templates about, okay, well, I can use this pharmaceutical therapy. It might be useful. They're often useful, short periods of time. Sometimes they're the answer. We have that in our toolbox or in our medicine bag. You certainly do. But when I use these natural therapies and when the patient's willing to change, in this case, usually her diet, you see such massive changes in the right direction.
I think you see more, you see a person approach wellness, right?
Thank you.
So there's management of conditions. So they're okay. They're managing it. And then there's true wellness. There's vitality, right? So that I think is the difference between integrative types of approaches and just straight traditional management. Because that's the management is just that. It's management. It's not resolution. It's just management. So, you know, it's very rewarding as a provider to, you know, bring someone to the point where they feel better in all aspects, right? They may have come with like one thing, you know, like say, for example, that woman with her heavy periods, but to walk away with something to help with your heavy periods and your cramps. And then over time, also a program that on the other hand helps you be a less stressed individual and more engaged in your own life and more nutritious overall, higher antioxidants, more regular exercise. That means you're a more vital person, period. Not just in this one aspect. So I just think, you know, integrative medicine, functional medicine, you know, and I think herbalism, right, is one thing that's just kind of like naturally integrative in its approach. I just think that approach, that 360 approach of looking at all aspects of health is supremely important.
It is. And we're going to take another little break right here, Dr. Courtney, because we're here on Progressive Radio Network, and we love for people to know about Progressive Radio Network because there's so much great programming here. So we're going to just take a little break so PRN, Progressive Radio Network, can sort of self-identify and tell you about some of the other wonderful shows that are here, including, of course, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thanks for listening. And when we come back, we will continue our fascinating discussion with our guest today, Dr. Courtney Sims, MD. You can find her at drcourtney.com. And she has a lot of other websites, all of which we'll list, such as crossroadsobgyn.com. And something that we talked about earlier, her holistic school of harmony and health. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, along with my illustrious guest, Dr. Courtney Sims, medical doctor, herbalist, member of the North American Menopause Society, and so well versed in all things medical on both sides of the aisle, if we say conventional and natural, although really they all fit together into integrative medicine. Wouldn't you say, Dr. Sims?
Absolutely. One umbrella.
And it's just what's good medicine. Now, you have also studied Ayurveda. And isn't it amazing that that's such an ancient system, and yet it really brings together such a cohesive view of the patient?
When I first started learning about that particular field of medicine, I was really amazed at how well, especially nowadays because we have so much chronic disease, how well they were able to look at people and analyze and have such a finite system to look at their physical composition and then develop therapeutic recommendations, like real what we call lifestyle medicine, you know, true lifestyle medicine, you know, between your taste and your meditation and your yoga, your spices, your herbs, your foods, the way that you put your foods together. I mean, it really is a very, if you think of it, right, like one of the oldest, if not the oldest, lifestyle medicine program on the planet. So I think it would be, you know, useful. I really love that field of medicine. I find a lot of congruency between a lot of the principles in that field, as well as traditional Chinese medicine, especially when it comes to a lot of the energetics behind foods and spices and herbs. So I really enjoy, you know, sometimes I feel like it could take me a little bit longer to come up with a therapeutic plan, because I am kind of layering in, you know, it's like a thread, right? So I'm layering in my Ayurvedic thread, and then I'm layering in my functional thread, and then I'm also layering in my Western herbalism thread, and, you know, my general TCM knowledge to try to come up with the best therapeutic approach.
And I'm sure you have excellent outcomes. Let's go a little bit into herbs. Believe it or not, our time is flying, but we do have a few more minutes. And after all your years and a lot of successes with various clients and patients, what are like one or two herbs in terms of women's wellness that sort of just pop into your head that might be good for members in our audience to investigate?
Oh, Ellen, one or two?
I know. That's the hard part. We'll start with that.
Okay. Well, how about this? You know, because I do a lot of perimenopausal work, I would definitely have to say Shatavari is a good friend to a lot of women.
Shatavari. Now, that's great, because that might be one that people have not heard of. So let's talk about it.
It's one of the herbs that I first started learning about in Ayurvedic medicine. It's also used a lot in Chinese medicine, but it's a good herb for clearing heat. So a lot of times when you're going through, you know, not even just perimenopause, but sometimes even in the 30s, when you wake up and kind of have that, like, you know, hot sweat or that hot feeling at night, and you can use this herb to help your body better clear heat. And I also like it because it can be used relatively, you know, tonically. So it's not something that you just have to use, you know, for, you know, a 4-week period of time and then come off of it. And then sometimes, you know, and it's easy to use. You can use it in capsule form. You can use it in tincture form. You can use it in powdered form. But I really like that. You know, I think that's a good woman's wellness herb, right, in terms of heat symptoms. Now, there's also, you know, things that I really, really like. You know, I find a lot of use, believe it or not, from chamomile, just simple, good old chamomile, just in terms of calming nerves, and mixing that maybe with a little bit of oat straw, maybe some milky oak tincture. You know, I find a lot of benefit to the nervines. So like the nervines and adaptogens, because a lot of my patients are stressed and worried, especially, you know, like, and now, you know, pandemic they were already stressed before, and now it's just off the charts.
See, those are wonderful herbs that you're suggesting, because there's something that they're very widely available, you know, such as chamomile. And really actually is wonderful to have a cup of chamomile in the evening. And then when you look at the genus and species name of it, which is Matricaria, means mother of the stomach. And then, of course, in functional and holistic viewpoints, we know so much has to do with the Agni, the digestive fire. Mm-hmm. So then we see where chamomile might actually be so useful and has a very low incidence of adverse effects, except in those people who have daisy sensitivities.
Yes, yes. So, let's see, what else comes to mind? I use a lot of yarrow for, you know, patients who have issues with heavy bleeding. That's one of the common reasons why I use that. But that's, you see, that's why I say you can't just limit it to just like one or two.
No, and then it depends not only on the symptoms, but the client themselves, yeah. Right? Especially when you have an Ayurvedic background knowledge, it could be a very cold type person, you know, like a very vata person with a hot condition versus a pitta who's already a hot person with a hot condition. So there's a lot of nuanced knowledge that might affect which herbs you suggest.
Use, right. And that, I think that comes with, you know, I think it's just important when you're seeking out your herbal, you know, treatments and regimens, you know, it's just important that you make sure that you, you know, go to someone who, you know, has that background ability to look at it through that layer of nuance, because there are a lot of talented herbalists in our communities. And so the resources, you know, are there. For people to, you know, reach out and consume. But we just want to make sure that, you know, when you go and you look for someone, you know, ask them about, you know, their experiences, ask them about their training. You know, you can ask these just like, you know, you would ask these of any healthcare provider. You know, I'm sure, you know, your community herbalists will love to tell you about, you know, how they came to be and how they trained and what, you know, what they've done. So
that is important, because some people really take a weekend class with, let's say, a company, and they suddenly call themselves an herbalist. That's not the same as you.
Oh, no. I would say, you know, and this is, you know, honest talk. Like I'm still on the path, working on my path towards a registered herbalist, even though I practice as a clinical herbalist. So, and this path, right, that I've been working for my registered herbalist is just as rigorous, if not more so in depth and detail and level of learning as my board certification for OBGYN. There's so much nuance to learn with herbs and different systems and contraindications and dosing. You know, it is deep work. You know, it's not, you know, it goes more beyond just knowing, you know, with the primary indication.
You but know, can you people really see, are you seeing that. People now, Dr. Courtney, at a distance, if any of our listeners know that, but you're also a board certified MD, you know, so this really expands your capacity for dealing with a client in all aspects. But are you able to see people, let's say, virtually, if they're not your clinic?
Yes, absolutely. I definitely see people virtually. That is actually the bulk of my practice. I call it a telegynecology practice, in-person visits as needed.
So I wonder where they'll soon have kind of a speculum that you can hook up to the computer.
Well, that part, no, we're not there yet. Right. That part, we're not there. But, you know, a lot of the work, you know, a lot of the work really does come in like the client history. And because of technology, you know, you can have, you know, people take pictures of their tongue. I can have people take pictures of their skin, their nails. You know, we're not doing pictures of, you know, private areas. But yeah, most of the time in a good clinical history, you know, I can still get a tremendous amount of detail and even enough to know, right? Like to tell somebody, okay, no, you know, based off of what you're saying, you definitely need to have someone look at this in person versus no, you know, based off what you're saying, you know, I think that I have this picture completed and we can move forward with some therapeutic options.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Courtney, for being our guest today. This is Dr. Courtney Sims, medical doctor, also herbalist, also Ayurvedically trained. I mean, really a wonderful provider. And one of the tasks I'm putting forth for you is to get this information into medical training. It's a shame that our physicians are sort of blocked from this knowledge, because it is the right way to go. It is real medicine, where we're not throwing out conventional, we're not throwing out drugs and surgery. We need them in their place, but there's so many other interventions that are gentler, milder, and more effective, with a much lower adverse effect history, that really should be used first as conventional intervention.
So true, Ellen. So true.
Totally. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being our guest, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. If you listen to us live, you can find our archive show with Dr. Courtney Sims. And Dr. Courtney, I will be sending you a link probably by tomorrow for you to share, and listeners can join in any time. So thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, on behalf of myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone. We hope that you stay healthy.